Hello and welcome to Men's Magazines on Sunsounds Radio at sunsounds.org. I'm your host, Robert Streit, and Men's Magazines focuses on the arts, culture, commentary, and in-depth news reporting is found in both the domestic and the international editions of GQ, Esquire, and Men's Health. In this edition, for the first week of April 2025, we will be devoting the hour to a GQ celebration of Saturday Night Live. I know, SNL at 50 has been all over your TV screen for weeks now, with three-hour celebratory shows, best-of retrospectives, and musical documentaries by Questlove. But GQ offers us something special today. A look at the history, a look behind the scenes, and a decade-by-decade remembrance in alignment with the experience of successive generations of fans. Was the original cast the best? Probably. Was it all downhill from there? Possibly. But no. No, not really. Not at all. SNL is 50 because magic has been happening on its stage year after year for five decades and counting. We will get to it without further ado once I remind us all that Men's Magazines includes adult content and, on occasion, language which some might find offensive. Having said that, I encourage you to sit back, relax, and enjoy Men's Magazines. As Saturday Night Live celebrates a half century on the air, GQ talks to over 50 past and present cast members about life behind the scenes of a pop cultural institution. From the mortal terror of the audition process to the sketches you never saw, Saturday Night Forever, as told to Brittany Loggins, Gabriella Paella, Alex Papademos, Zinnia Salfiti. Saturday Night Live turns 50 this year. A seemingly doomed seat of the bell-bottom pants comedy Moonshot, launched in 1975 by a scruffy band of stoners and Canadians, has become an iconic staple of the broadcast landscape, the longest-running scripted show on American television that isn't a soap opera or Sesame Street. It's inspired and outlasted decades of competitors, weathered its share of down years, and proved countless Saturday Night Dead headlines inaccurate. Is it as good today as it used to be? Depends on your age and when you started watching. As Lorne Michaels likes to say, the best SNL cast is whoever was on the show when you were in high school. Discovering SNL around age 14, when you're just juvenile enough for the dumb jokes and just cynical enough for the smart ones, is a rite of passage for anyone steeped in American pop culture. So is feeling like the new cast will never equal the lineup you fell in love with. I was a freshman in 1991 when Chris Rock, Chris Farley, and Julia Sweeney moved up from feature players to join Phil Hartman and Dana Carvey on the A Squad, and I remember being skeptical in 1995 about a new guy named Will Ferrell. One day, the 14-year-old SNL fans of right now will be adults who insist the show just isn't the same without Sarah Sherman or Bowen Yang. That's how it's worked ever since the original Not Ready for Primetime players began moving on at the end of the 70s. A new cast enters the arena, tries to make a mark, and eventually becomes somebody's idea of what SNL is. As Carvey suggests, that means SNL is also, on some level, a reality show about its actors. You're watching them in real time try to do live sketch comedy in New York in this institution, Saturday Night Live, he said, and how they respond and how they grow. Last year, GQ spoke to Carvey along with over 50 other past and present SNL cast members, from OGs Lorraine Newman, Jane Curtin, and Garrett Morris, to newcomers like Ashley Padilla, Jane Wickline, and Emil Joachim, who were gearing up for their ninth show when we talked. We asked everyone the same 8 questions about the show's cultural footprint and their own experiences making it. And while SNL has evolved quite a bit since 1975 as a show and as a workplace, there were remarkable commonalities in the stories we heard. Here, in the cast's own words, is what it's like to go live from New York. Favorite cast member when you started watching the show? Bill Hader, cast member 2005 to 2013. Oh man, it was a toss-up between Dana Carvey and Phil Hartman. Phil Hartman, I just always admired him. It didn't matter what part he was in, he made it, in a weird way, real. But also, it had a funny rhythm to it, and was never sweaty in any way. I really responded to that. Harry Shearer, cast member 1979 to 1980, 1984 to 1985. Billy, Bill Murray, and Gilda. Of course, Gilda Radner was just such a charming presence and was sort of electric, and everybody's gotten to know what Billy is, just a marvelously versatile actor and a really crappy lounge singer. Anna Gasteyer, cast member 1996 to 2002. It would probably be Gilda. Funny, funny characters. I was a weird child in that I found really dry, mature performers hilarious. So I really loved Jane Curtin as well. She could clip the edges of a joke sharper than anybody. Tim Kazurinsky, cast member 1980 to 84. John Belushi. Janine Garofalo, cast member 1994 to 95. I was particularly smitten with Bill Murray, but as the years went on, I have to say, among my uber favorites is the late Jan Hooks. Amy Poehler, cast member 2001 to 2008. Jan Hooks. Sarah Silverman, cast member and writer 1993 to 94. Jan Hooks and Nora Dunn. I fucking loved them. That was big in my high school days. The Sweeney sisters. Melanie Hutsell, cast member 1991 to 94. I particularly liked Jan Hooks and Nora Dunn. Kenan Thompson, cast member 2003 to the present. Chris Farley. Vanessa Bayer, cast member 2010 to 17. Chris Farley. I was obsessed with him. My whole family was obsessed with him. I think I've watched Tommy Boy probably 50 times. Tim Robinson, cast member 2012 to 13. Writer 2013 to 16. Chris Farley, probably, if I had to pick one. The best of I watched on VHS on repeat was Farley's. Ellen Cleghorn, cast member 1991 to 95. Eddie Murphy. Chris Rock, cast member 1990 to 93. Eddie Murphy and Tim Kazurinsky. Heidi Gardner, cast member 2017 to the present. Eddie Murphy and Dana Carvey. Chris Kattan, cast member 1996 to 2003. Eddie Murphy, he was my biggest influence. When he broke the fourth wall in a sketch called Black History Minute, he yelled at the audience because he messed up a line, and he said, "So I messed up, shut up." That's where I went, yeah, I really want to be on this show. I must have been 12, maybe 13. Daryl Hammond, cast member 1995 to 2009, announcer 2014 to the present. The first time I saw Eddie Murphy, I realized that's what I want to be in life. I don't know if I'll ever be as good as him, but that's where I'm going. That's true north for me now. Tracy Morgan, cast member 1996 to 2003. Eddie's a good friend of mine. Me, Eddie Murphy, Arsenio Hall, and Martin Lawrence, we all communicate to this day. He taught me a lot about Saturday Night Live. When I first met Eddie Murphy, the first thing he said to me was, "Go to the update desk because you're directly in America's home when you do that, and try not to wear a mask or a mustache and use your regular name. That's how you become a household name." Sarah Sherman, cast member 2021 to the present. I was obsessed with Molly Shannon's Mary Catherine Gallagher. I couldn't even believe it when we met her. I was like, did it hurt when you jumped on all the chairs? And she was like, no, I was on adrenaline. And then I got obsessed with Norm Macdonald, and then I got obsessed with Fred Armisen because he was such a weirdo. I always really liked the weirdos. Cecily Strong, cast member 2012 to 2022. I definitely did a lot of impressions of Mike Myers as a little kid. I also did the cheerleaders. I probably did an impression of everyone on the show on the playground at some point. Pete Davidson, cast member 2014 to 2022. My favorite cast member and human being forever will always be the Sandman. Devin Walker, cast member 2022 to the present. I remember the Lonely Island being the first thing that everybody knew about my school. I was a teenager at that point, and I'm on a boat, and all that stuff really resonated with me. Will Forte, cast member 2002 to 2010. It was Mr. Bill. I was so young. What do you remember about your SNL audition, and how did you celebrate when you got hired? Andy Samberg, cast member 2005 to 2012. When I was asked to audition, it just seemed like that was the victory already. I went in pretty loose because of that. I honestly was just like, I'm going to get to stand up there and try, and that's going to be the greatest moment in my life. Chris Parnell, cast member 1998 to 2006. They put you up there on home base by yourself, which is where the host does the monologue, and they have one camera set up in front of you, and you do your little one-person show. Alex Moffat, cast member 2016 to 2022. They also make you wait 4 hours in some random dressing room before you go out there, so I think it's built to kind of separate the wheat from the chaff. Forte. It was so nerve-wracking. I was just a writer, so I had never been on TV before. It was terrifying. Robinson. You're like stepping into the Simpsons house for real or whatever. You're like, holy shit. Bobby Moynihan, cast member 2008 to 17. I was like, I can't believe I'm here. It was like I was a fan on a tour, and then I went, oh yeah, here's a couple of characters I could do. Okay, now can I look at the studio some more? Morgan, I was very nervous. I had a wife and 3 kids. When I went into audition, that's all I thought about. If I nail this, if I come off like a fat rat in a cheese factory, I could change my family's life. And that was my whole foundation right there. Jay Farrow, cast member 2010 to 16. I remember me and my girlfriend breaking up 2 days before the audition. It was crazy. I was like, I'm going to show you. Honestly, if that wouldn't have happened, who knows? Maybe I would still be working at Burlington Coat Factory. I don't know. Sashir Zamata, cast member 2014 to 17. I remember hearing Leslie Jones auditioning before me and destroying because she's hilarious. Michael Shea, writer 2013 to the present, cast member 2014. To the present. As a performer, you're used to listening to the audience and going off the energy of the crowd, and it's sort of a dialogue. This is just sort of a monologue into the darkness, and your boss is watching. It's like a nightmare. Hammond, there's no sound. It's just this very, very famous man in this very, very famous place, and you're doing your funniest, best stuff, and he's not responding. What I do remember walking away from it was that I didn't choke, and it was incredibly important to me because when I first walked in there, I thought I would just turn around and walk right back out. It was too scary. The Stones played to my left, and Lawrence sitting there, and he could not be more unengaged. The fact is, he's incredibly engaged. He's studying. But I was like, can there be some laughs? Nope. Bear. I remember doing my first character and getting laughs. I remember I was really blown away by that. I was like, oh my God, I can't believe they're laughing. I heard they never laugh. Parnell. I actually did get a little laughter. I got some chuckles from the darkness out there, whoever was watching. Chloe Feynman. Cast member, 2019 to the present. I remember the only thing Lorne laughed at was a weird impression I did of Greta Gerwig. Hater. I remember being nervous, but then Tina Fey laughed. I started doing the Vinnie Vidicci voice, and she started laughing, and then I relaxed. Jay Moore, cast member 1993 to 95. I thought the SNL producers were sitting in the back left-hand corner of the room, so after every story or impression I did, I stared into the back left corner, because I wanted them to know I wasn't afraid of them. And then, when I walked off stage to the right, I passed them. So I was staring at the wrong corner. My whole audition, I just stared down an investment banker from Poughkeepsie. Cleghorn. The casting lady told me, don't be strident, and I had no idea what the word meant. We didn't have Google back in those days, so I had to actually go get a dictionary and look it up. There was this thing that I did where I played a young child who was having a tantrum, so I decided not to do that character. She was strident. Maybe that's why I got the job. Tim Meadows, cast member, 1991 to 2000. Lauren brought me in for a meeting. I went up to his office after waiting like 10 hours, and then he talked to me for a few minutes, and then he brought in the cast of the first Five Timers Club sketch while I was sitting in his office. I was just an actor from Chicago, and then all these people start walking in. Steve Martin, Paul Simon, Ralph Nader, Conan O'Brien was in that room. I read the sketch with them, and I think that was my audition. I think Lauren just wanted to see if I could handle being around celebrities and not go, oh my God, it's Steve Martin. I was very cool about it. But then later when I got home, I can't believe I was in the same room with Steve Martin. Hater. SNL producer Marcy Klein called me. She goes, oh, you got the show. So you're flying tomorrow to New York with a guy named Andy Samberg. He's not hired yet, so don't tell him that he's hired. Immediately, it was weird. Like, you got it, this other guy. I think we're going to hire him, but we don't know, so don't tell him. Samberg. Bill very, very sweetly let me wait all the way until getting there and having the meeting. Hater. It was very strange, but it was very SNL. You leave the same way. It's like, all right, that's it. Like, all right, well, bye. There's no party thrown or whatever, or you have to make your own party, which I think pisses them off. Samberg. Ironically, I still didn't know if I had gotten it after I left the meeting with Lorne. They had to tell me outside of his office because he's so vague about things. He said, do you think you could do this? And I said, yes. He said, do you think you could live in New York? I said, yes, I've lived here before for a few years and I love it. He said, would you be willing to cut your hair? I said, I'll shave my head if you want me to. He said, that won't be necessary. And then he said, all right, well, we're going to go out to dinner after this, so you should come. And I realized a year later that that was how he was saying that I was hired. Sherry O'Terry, cast member 1995 to 2000. Will Ferrell and I were called in. I went first. I remember buying a dress to go that I really couldn't afford. I went in. He said, we want you to come to New York. But he never said, you got the job. Strong. You can't quite tell what news Lorne has given you sometimes. O'Terry. And then, when I was finished, Will went in and I waited for him and we got out and we walked very calmly to the parking lot holding hands and then we just screamed by the time we got in the parking lot. Molly Shannon, cast member, 1995 to 2001. I got asked to fly to New York and meet with Lorne, and I was so excited. And then I got mugged in Tribeca, slammed down on the sidewalk by a guy who took my wallet. But I was so excited that I just met Lorne that it didn't really bother me. Nothing was going to get me down, you know? Kazurinsky. I grew up in Australia, so I couldn't even call there and tell my family because the show didn't run in Australia back then. So I just screamed out the window, driving my little black 1959 Volkswagen Beetle up Chicago's Lakeshore Drive on my way home and called a couple of pals and we went out and had beers. Thompson. I celebrated by buying a plane ticket to New York the very next day. I think I got the call on a Saturday and I had to be to work on Monday. Ego Nwadum, cast member, 2018 to the present. I celebrated by moving. I celebrated on United Airlines with a glass of champagne. That was the extent of the celebration. Kevin Nealon, cast member, 1986 to 95. It happened so quickly. They needed me in New York on Monday, I think, and I think they told me on Friday. I didn't really have a chance to tell too many people. This was before social media. This was also before the light bulb, and so I packed up. Finesse Mitchell, cast member, 2003-06. They called me and said, "Hey, you got the job. We'll see you at work on Monday." We flew out on a Sunday. You go in, and you're sitting in Lorne Michaels' office, and he's like, "Welcome to SNL. It's the first week of the season. The host is Jack Black. Everybody say hello to Jack." And I'm like, oh shit, this is the first day of school, and I didn't have a place to live. I was staying at a hotel. Garofalo. If you're asking how I celebrated, it would be how I was doing everything back then. I enjoyed a cocktail a great deal. Do you know what I'm saying? I don't drink anymore. Put it that way. I've been sober since 2001, and I'm not making light of it. It was just New York. It was so exciting. I was probably tipsy when I got the offer. Again, that's not pride. I'm just telling you. James Austin Johnson, cast member, 2021 to the present. If I had gotten the job in my 20s, I would have celebrated all crazy. Instead, I was just sort of doing the big life spreadsheet in my head, and I've kind of never stopped doing that spreadsheet in my head. But I will say, when I got home, my wife had a cookie cake for me that said SNL Big Boy on it, and she had gotten a Pikachu balloon from the drugstore, so we had some cookie cake. A dry-ass cookie cake. Andrew Dismukes, writer, 2017 to 2020, cast member, 2020 to the present. I was delivering Postmates, and I was dropping off somebody's sushi at their house, and I got a phone call from one of the producers at the show telling me I got hired as a writer. I just dropped off this guy's sushi and clocked out of the app and went home and didn't do Postmates anymore. So yeah, I celebrated by giving another person sushi. Your all-time favorite sketch that you appeared in? Lorraine Newman, cast member, 1975 to 80. In the show Order, it was called Beatnik Coffee House, but it's also called Plato's Cave. Steve Martin was the host, and every cast member was beautifully represented, and the writing was so edgy and specific. Michael O'Donohue's voice is embedded in it, but I asked Tom Schiller, and he said everyone had a hand in it. Steve played a beat poet. Belushi was the jittery, junky comedian that only the band found funny. Gilda was the radical feminist waitress. Garrett Morris was the blind blues singer. Danny Aykroyd was a bongo-playing MC, and I was a poetry-spouting modern dancer. The jokes are so deeply funny and harsh at the same time. Rock. The Nat X Show with Vanilla Ice. Shannon, the very first time I ever did Mary Catherine Gallagher was just absolutely mind-blowingly thrilling. That it worked. That people laughed. I felt like I could feel my life was going to change. Cast member Jim Brewer was so sweet. He said he had never heard the audience laugh and clap so loud. He said it was like a roar. Ah! Hater. It was always fun being in What Up With That because I had no lines. I would just get dressed up as Lindsay Buckingham, and I had nothing to do. I just had to give Keenan a look, and it would get a laugh. Mike Day, writer 2013 to 2016, cast member 2016 to the present. Beavis and Butthead from last season with Ryan Gosling. I have said it before, but I believe I have peaked with that sketch. It's all downhill from here. Bowen Yang, writer 2018 to 19, cast member 2019 to the present. The sketch that I was in that I feel like added years to my life was Lisa from Temecula. Just being in the room for that, I felt like affirmed that life is amazing, that humanity is capable of incredible things. It just filled me with a sense of infinite joy and possibility. Michaela Watkins, cast member 2008 to 2009. It was my second week, and John Malkovich was hosting. And Seth Meyers said, as a joke, when we were pitching ideas for the show, "What about a sketch based on dangerous liaisons that takes place in a hot tub, and it's called Jacuzzi?" I got to do the Glenn Close part. I had done dangerous liaisons in college, and so to be in a hot tub in a Renaissance gown with John Malkovich shouting these lines from the film, and then Kristen Wiig put her hand on me, and she goes, "Can you believe our lives?" And I was like, "I can't believe our lives. Our lives are sick. This is amazing." Catan, the more cowbell sketch. It was very hard to not laugh in that sketch. Everybody in that sketch laughed, from Will falling all over after I pushed him. Kazurinsky, "I married a monkey. My wife was a live chimpanzee. This was long before I knew that they could rip your face off, but after the fifth time I did it, the monkey attacked me and said, 'That's it, we're done.'" Robert Smigel, writer 1985 to 1993, 1996 to 2008, cast member 1991 to 1993. "I was always very proud of Schmidt's Gay, because I thought it was not making fun of gay people. It was making fun of the exploitation and sexualization of women and sexualization in beer commercials and the inherent homophobia assumed in those people in the target audience." And I'll just say one more, which is the "Not Gonna Phone It In Tonight" song with Steve Martin. I remember I just had chills watching it come off. Ashley Padilla, cast member 2024 to the present. "So far, I would say the Italian commercial I did with Paul Mescal. I had fun with him yelling at me because he's very sweet in real life." Tell us about the best sketch you worked on that didn't make it to air. And we must pause here for station identification. You're listening to Men's Magazines on Sunsounds Radio at sunsounds.org. And now back to Saturday Night Live at 50, courtesy of GQ. And the sketches, the best sketches that did not make it to air. Newman. Raquel Welch was the host, and there was a sketch Rosie Schuster wrote that featured my Lena Wertmuller character. It was elaborate and bent, and Raquel nixed it so she could sing Ain't Necessarily So. Years later, she got Lena Wertmuller's autograph for me. Cleghorn. There's this sketch that I wrote where I was Reverend Hightower. It was a nod to Flip Wilson's preacher character. It passed the table read, it went to dress rehearsal, but it didn't get to go to air, and I didn't bring it back. I didn't know that that's what you do. You just keep trying until you weaken everybody, and they're like, "Oh, God, let's please put it on so she'll stop bringing it to table read." Hutzel. Some people are more adamant about things like that and don't give up quite as quickly as other people. I was quite young at the time, so I maybe didn't handle my emotions quite as well as I should have. I would get really sad if something I wrote didn't get on. Dismukes. I did one with Beck Bennett where he played a guy who had no forehead. That was kind of the whole sketch. It was very stupid, and they were probably right not to put it on. But we put it to the table read like 8 different times over 4 years, and every time it killed. But they were like, This is so stupid. There's no way. Silverman. I had learned some fun fact at the time about how flies' whole expectancy is 24 hours. I thought that was so cool and tragic and beautiful. Phil Hartman goes, "Hey, why don't you write something for us to do together?" So I did. He was an elderly fly, like 23 and a half hours old, and I was a young fly who just sprouted wings. It was him telling me the ways of the world, saying things like, "I remember noon." At the end, a dog comes in and takes a shit and leaves, and then Phil says, "Go get it, kids." Moffat, a commercial parody for Wrangler peekaboos, which got cut for time. They were like men's jeans that had a little peekaboo window for the upper butt. And that was for Will Ferrell week. So I have just great memories of watching Will with his ass hanging out of these jeans and hip-checking a jukebox. Kyle Mooney, cast member 2013 to 2022. There was one with Benedict Cumberbatch where we were actors in a big-budget movie, and I played a guy playing a farting troll suspended on wires. I kept on telling everyone on set how much the wires were hurting me, and then I was accidentally doing flips and farting a ton. The audience was fully silent. Hater. There was a sketch called The Casems that me and John Mulaney wrote. It was me and Dana Carvey when he hosted. He was Casey Kasem, and I was his son, J.C. Kasem. And I was coming to his house in the middle of the night, and it was a very serious talk between a father and a son who were estranged because of the son's drug problem, but were both talking like Casey Kasem the whole time. "Dad, just hear me out." And then we did it at dress, and you could just feel the audience be like, "Who's Casey Kasem?" David Spade, cast member 1990 to 96. There were a lot of Weekend Update bits that got shot down that I wish would have made it. If the show was 10 minutes longer, I would have been a huge star. What was the all-time greatest SNL cast? Rock. The original cast was the best. Joe Piscopo, cast member 1980 to 84. First cast, original cast, never before, never since. Best cast ever, television history. No one's matched it, not marginally. It was the Beatles, it was Frank Sinatra, and then all of us tried to do the best we could, and some of us had some really great moments. Thompson. They made a foundation to build on, a foundation of freedom, creativity, really funny performance, and smart material. Dan Aykroyd used to do some wild runs. Dana Carvey, cast member 1986 to 93. They were just rock stars and badass pirates. When I got the show, I didn't really feel like I belonged. Aykroyd, Bill Murray. They were all over 6 feet tall. Belushi obviously could beat you up or hit you, and Chevy was 6'4". So I just felt like they could make you laugh or beat you up. So when I came in with Phil Hartman, God rest his soul, and Jan Hooks and everybody, I didn't really have any sense of thinking we could do anything like that. I pretty much thought the plug would be pulled on the show when I was on it. But from 90 to 93, we had Phil Hartman and Mike Myers, and then we added in what we used to call the junior varsity. Chris Rock, Adam Sandler, Chris Farley, David Spade, Tim Meadows, Ellen Cleghorn. When those guys were coming into their own, and we still had the other team who'd been there a while, it was a pretty magic to be there. Gasteyer. To pick one cast would be kind of unfair to the legacy. But specifically, I wanted to be a comedian when I first saw Jan Hooks and Nora Dunn work. Davidson. My favorite era is definitely the Sandler-Farley-Spade era, because you can tell they were best pals, and it was more like watching your friends goof off. The best cast ever, though, was the class before mine. Hader, Wig, Armisen, Sandberg, Forte, Seth Meyers, etc. Johnson. It's the one that has Kristen Wiig, Bill Hader, Fred Armisen, Jason Sudeikis. That's the best cast of SNL. I feel very comfortable saying it. There's something really, really special about those years. I'm in awe of their connection to each other when I see them in scenes together. They are so bonded, and that is what I tune in for as a sketch comedy enjoyer. It doesn't get better than The Californians. They're breaking because, yes, it's a silly, really fun sketch, but I mean, they're breaking because they enjoy each other. And I think that is sublime. That's what I'm always striving for, is a sublime moment. That's me speaking very, very highly of what is, at its core, a very ridiculous sketch. But this is my life's work, so I'm happy to speak that elevatedly about it. Hater. I think it's always the cast that you first saw, and so for me, it was 1986. I think maybe the first episode of SNL I remember watching was their first show. Sigourney Weaver hosting, and it's when Dana Carvey sang Chopping Broccoli. I remember that vividly. Jan Hooks in the Judge Wapner sketch with Rosanna Arquette, where she says, I'm a barfly. That's funny. Cleghorn. The all-time greatest cast, I would have to say, is the original, of course. But I want to be egotistically subjective and say that my era was the best. Chris Farley, Adam Sandler, David Spade, Kevin Nealon, Julia Sweeney? Walker. Am I allowed to say it's our cast? I know you're supposed to say it was the 70s cast or the 90s cast, but I believe in what we're doing at the show right now so much that I'm going with our squad. Give me Dismukes and Bowen Yang and Sarah Sherman and James Austin Johnson and Ego Nwadim. Give me my starting five. I like our team. I believe in us a lot. My favorite era is the one we're in. Present day. Next question. Who is the funniest person in the history of SNL? Smigel. Bill Murray. He's also the funniest person I've ever met. If I had a gun to my head that was being held by Bill Murray. Newman. There simply can't be a single funniest, but I'd say in the original cast, Dan Aykroyd, in my opinion, was the funniest. Jim Belushi, cast member 1983 to 85. John. Absolutely. The greatest. Yang. The one that set the model for all the future success of the show was probably Gilda Radner. She technically had the first recurring character with Rosanna Dana. She had the first catchphrase with It's Always Something. She came on and just set the blueprint. Rob Riggle, cast member 2004 to 2005. On the Mount Rushmore of that show, it has to be Eddie. It has to be Will Ferrell. Probably Belushi and probably Aykroyd. Oh God, that's not fair either because Amy Poehler belongs up there too. It's going to be a big Rushmore, like an eight-faced Rushmore. Poehler. Maya Rudolph. Feynman. Kate McKinnon, a truly uninhibited weirdo who I was really lucky to be insane with. Jane Wickline, cast member 2024 to the present. Kristen Wiig, she's just a genius. Meadows, Kristen Wiig, probably. She does weird shit. She does character shit, and she just seems nuts, and I love that about her. Piscopo, Eddie, far and away. Everybody's going to tell you that same answer, but I had the honor of creating with him. And I may be not objective in that regard, but Eddie Murphy, hands down. Taryn Killam, cast member 2010 to 2016. He was 19 years old and was maybe the most confident comedic performer in history. He wasn't afraid to be silly, but he was also very cool, which I found very appealing. Rock. Eddie Murphy was the best. Second best was Phil Hartman. Cleghorn. Eddie Murphy, a close second for me, is Chris Farley, just ridiculously funny. Van down by the river, that ability to make anger really funny. Carvey, Farley doing in a van down by the river was the most explosively funny thing. You would never want your sketch to come on after that. Moore, Chris Farley doing Little Women was the greatest sketch I've ever seen in my life. They're all speaking this Victorian fancy-schmancy language, and then he falls through the ice and he's swearing at them. But when it was over,
He got up out of the water and he put his fists up over his head and the place erupted like a fighter leaving the octagon. That was one of the more powerful things I've ever seen. Thompson. Will Ferrell. He's one of the funniest people, but also one of the nicest in the world. Sandberg. I don't know about the funniest ever, but probably the hardest I ever laughed and the most I ever laughed at one cast member personally is Ferrell. It felt like he was talking right to me with the way that him and Adam McKay were writing.
Emil Joachim, cast member 2024 to the present. Every single word Will Forte says makes me laugh so hard. Killam, Will Forte. I love the sort of deranged quality of his work. He can go from really, really sweet and unassuming to horribly, offensively dark. Nobody commits harder. Davidson. The funniest cast member ever is Will Forte. Nobody made Lorne laugh harder.
Mark McKinney, writer 1985 to 86, cast member 1995 to 97. I can't give you one. I can't. There's just too many. No, I have to have at least 10. No, 15. Write down that I'm refusing to answer your question. Hey, I'll pick a long horse. I loved Denitra Vance. She came to the show as a performance artist from Chicago and was funny and wise and is no longer with us, so I'm going to tip my hat to her.
Neelan, besides me?
Tell us your best story about an interaction you had with a guest host or other visiting celebrity.
Gasteyer. I mean, generally speaking, guest hosts are on such good behavior because they really are being ruled by fear. It's a terrifying experience. They show up in this crazy house. There's no syllabus for how your week is going to go. No one's going to break it down for you. I have enormous respect for basically anyone who hosts because they have to really have faith in what turns out to be a very effective but pretty makeshift system.
Watkins. I found out I'd been cast on the show at 10 p.m. and I was in L.A. and I was on a plane at 5 a.m. to go to New York, and I went from the plane to the table read and from the table read to pulling an all-nighter because it was right night, I guess. And the first thing I was thrown into was the single ladies thing with Beyonce and Justin Timberlake. I mean, I hadn't even told my family I was on SNL, and here I was, sitting on Justin Timberlake's lap for a moment so that I could powder Beyonce's face. It was like a fever dream.
Paul Schaefer, Saturday Night Live band, 1975 to 80, cast member 1979 to 80.
It was the first show of season 4, I think. Somebody had written a sketch that was going to precede the Rolling Stones' first song, and I was going to be in it, and I'm super excited. I'm in the makeup room, and Mick kind of stumbles back there. He knows something that I don't know yet, which is that Lorne has cut the sketch part at the very last minute. I'm looking at myself getting so excited, and this is when I had my first conversation with Mick Jagger, which I'll never forget. He kind of focused in on me, and then he said, "You're cut." I'll never forget, really, the magnificence of that conversation we had.
Smigel. I got to write a sketch for Michael Jordan about the first black Harlem Globetrotter. That was the joke. We pretended there was this guy, Sweet River Baines, played by Michael Jordan, who had broken the color barrier on the Globetrotters. They're in a circle doing two-handed bounce passes to Sweet George Brown, and then Jordan completely dominates. We had a bunch of extras playing the original white Harlem Globetrotters, and I put myself in it as one of those guys. Back in 1945, half the players were Jewish and 5'10" and not that good, so I checked every box. I took a very slow two-handed shot that he blocked so hard that it slammed against the wall of the gym. I have myself on film being blocked by Michael Jordan, and that's a personal highlight for me.
O'Terry. Jim Carrey said to me, "Sherry, I auditioned for SNL. When I didn't get it, I went into such a depression. And then, here he is all these years later, and he's hosting. He probably had the best ever show from beginning to end that I was a part of. Every sketch that he did, he killed it. And I don't think I was ever so happy for a guest host. And he's like, this is such a dragon for me to slay. And he slayed it. Hater. Because I would do impressions, they would want me to do an impression of the host to the host. Like I did it to Christopher Walken and I did it to John Malkovich. And so I would invariably have to go into their dressing room and do it for them. And that was just so painful because it's always met with weird, steely silence and them going, okay, I guess I sound like that. Why did you do that? No, they were always nice. Johnson. Doing Adam Driver to Adam Driver. Pretty nerve-wracking. He was just at the opposite end of the table, just arms folded, kicked back, just watching me with a pretty scary look on his face, watching me do him. He said he thought it was funny. I never saw him laugh, but he told me he thought it was funny. I'm gonna take his word on it. Cleghorn. There's a picture of it to memorialize it so that everybody knows I'm not making it up. But I was in a sketch with Martin Scorsese and Robert De Niro. It was me as my crazy Zoraida character. Does life get any better than that? Garrett Morris, cast member 1975 to 80. Prince was doing the 15th anniversary show, and I was standing across from his dressing room. I didn't even know he was there. I knew he was going to do the show, but I didn't realize he was there. He opens the door. He sees me, and Prince very carefully walked over to me, reached out his hand, and said, Garrett, thank you very much. And then he went back to his room. That's something I'll never forget. More. I introduced myself to Kurt Cobain, and I said, hey, I'm Jay. And he said, are you a cast member? I said, no, I'm a featured performer. I write mostly for other people. And I was feeling self-pity, and then he looked at me and said, wow, so you're like a songwriter. And in that moment, I knew he would have traded places with me. Rock. I'll never forget talking to Kurt Cobain. I'll also never forget Sinead O'Connor and the night she ripped the picture of the Pope. Belushi. I remember Stevie Nicks looked at me as she was walking off the stage singing, and I got scared. I go, maybe she is a witch. I don't know. Moynihan. John McCain during the Good Nights, coming over, making eye contact with me, looking extremely excited to see me. I've never met John McCain before. He slapped me on the back and said, always a pleasure, Horatio. That was a great one. Robinson. I was walking through the halls with Buster, my son, and I saw Martin Short. Martin didn't even look at me, just came up to Buster, who was maybe six, and said, who do you think is funnier, me or your dad? And my son said, my dad. And he said, wrong answer, and walked away. He's one of the funniest people of all time. Wickline. During the Charlie XCX week, which was about 3 weeks ago, I went to the bathroom. And it was a pretty small bathroom. It was a two-stall bathroom. And Julia Fox and her entire team were in there. And she was like, hi, it's nice to meet you. And she was being so sweet. And I was like, well, I guess I still have to go to the bathroom. And so I just went into the stall and waited. I didn't pee because I was like, I don't want her to hear me pee. Or I just was so starstruck, and then I just waited the amount of time and sat on the closed toilet, and then I washed my hands and left, pretended to pee, which is more embarrassing because they all heard me not pee. It would have been more normal to pee. The culture is always changing. Why do you think SNL has persisted for 50 years? Polar. It's live, baby. Shay, I've always felt like Lorne runs the show like a college football coach, where it doesn't matter who the star is because they're not permanent. He's kind of the only fixture, and he recruits and plans for the future in a way that I don't think other shows do. A lot of times, if a show has somebody as talented as Will Ferrell or Kate McKinnon or Kristen Wiig or somebody like that, that's sort of carrying the show. If they leave, the show's done. But Lauren's thinking of the future of the show constantly. So no matter who leaves, somebody else is next up. Forte. He's created this place where you have this really safe space to just go nuts and do what you think is funny. And then he lets you do your thing. It's very rare that you get notes on something you're doing. He will just let you produce your own thing. So you sink or swim on your own merit. Sandberg. I have always described SNL as like America's campfire. I was a big summer camp kid, and every night there's a campfire, and you sort of reflect on what happened, right? I mean, SNL is the conversation that we as a country have, and it's always having that conversation. And when we're, as a nation, having these conversations personally, it has them publicly. Cleghorn. It set the standard for TikTok and Mad TV and In Living Color and Funny or Die. It just opened the door. And I think everybody keeps looking back to see, what are they doing over there? Parnell, they did a really smart thing when they brought on Andy and Akiva Schaffer and Jorma Taccone, who took SNL into the digital age. The way that those got out there, went viral and all of that, I think that was a huge, huge moment for the show. Bear. I think they meld every kind of comedy. The fact that in one show there's political satire, but there's also the dumbest, stupidest stuff, which was always my favorite. They have people who are kind of the best at doing every kind of comedy. They have, like, stand-ups and people who are more character actors and people who are more into jokes and people who are more into stories. And I just think they just do such a great job of mixing all those things together, and that good comedy never gets old. Belushi. I think it still runs on the coattails of that first cast. I remember when John was on it, I said, gee, I'd love to be on that show. And he goes, why would you want to be on that show? We captured the hearts of America. No one will ever be able to do that again. I go, because it's a job, John. Come on, give me a fucking break. But they captured the hearts of America, and we keep going back to see if someone else will capture our hearts. Sherman. There's always new kinds of interesting voices. When I was growing up, it was like Fred Armisen was the weirdo who spoke to my generation of little weirdos. And it was like Jane Wickline is on the show now, who has a legion of TikTok Gen Zers who love her style. It's just always really relevant. It's always keeping up with what people like. Jane Curtin, cast member 1975 to 80. Everybody who is an up-and-comer wants to host Saturday Night Live. If you can make it there, you can make it anywhere. That kind of New York thing. So they adapt and they find the best people. Johnson. I think it's managed to persist for 50 years because of the ways that it changes and the ways that it stays the same. One time I asked Lorne, why do we have this host dinner on Tuesday and not Monday when we're not really doing a whole lot of intense office work? And he just says, well, this is the way we've done it, and that is the word of God. That's the way we've always done it. When the production meetings happen, has not changed. And when blocking happens, has not changed. All this stuff, the rhythms of it, everyone can trust each other and rely on each other because they've all been apprenticed by people who did it that way. It's a craft. It's a trade. I like that it hasn't changed in the business of the trade, but it's persisted because it changes all the time. The creative engine of the show turns over, and I think that that is what keeps it alive. Carvey. I think you seriously have to put it on the shoulders of Lorne Michaels because he was the guy who hatched the idea and got all those people, and then he never bent. I mean, there were many times there was talk of the show should be taped, it should be on at 10, or it should be an hour long, they should change the theme. Lorne kept all these things in place. It's extraordinary. Now it's 50 years in. Lorne's at the parties. He's nocturnal. He stays. He talks. Where's Waldo? There's Lorne. And he's sitting there in his office on the couch, and he has his popcorn, and he'll just slowly, casually produce the show. Lorne, Michael's voice now. Wayne's World Top 10 might be nice. Maybe we'll do a Biden. He's such a character. You'd have to write a novel about it. You buy your suits in London in the winter. You go ski Buttermilk in Aspen. You go to St. Bart's in maybe February, and you always go to Wimbledon. He's just had a really interesting life, and he's still there, still passionate about it. You can see that he really wants his show to be good every week. Davidson. The reason SNL is still going strong is because of Lorne. He has special powers. He knows what's going on before it's going on. Yang. It evolves and adapts so well because it is at the mercy of time. It's at the mercy of being a 90-minute show. It's at the mercy of going on at 11:30, whether or not the show is ready. It's at the mercy of responding to the current moment. So it's always a snapshot of what that week in American life was. You know, if you go back and watch any episode, you will just get kind of an amazing sample of what, for the lack of a better term, the vibes were. Another hour has blown past here on Men's Magazines at Sunsounds Radio on sunsounds.org. I'm your host, Robert Streit. I have very much enjoyed reading for you about SNL at 50. I hope you found some insight and some pleasure in it, too. That last bit there, the ending minutes, I found actually kind of touching. I wonder if you did. The idea that it is confined by time, 90 minutes, that it has committed to a rhythm during the week, that it keeps finding people who capture America's heart, and it keeps asking, you know, who will be next to do so. It's an amazing show. It's been an amazing hour, and I look forward to reading for you again next week. Between now and then, have a laugh or two. See if you can't find some SNL on YouTube or on your TV on demand. Take care of yourself. Take care of one another. Peace.